So I'm joined now by three people who work on the festival circuit in Ireland, but who are not musicians. So Orla Gilsonen is from Dublin Body Paint. Michael Ryan is a yoga instructor. And Natasha Chapur is from the Vegan Kitchen Food Truck. Guys, you're all very welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
So Orla, we'll start with you. So your work is face and body painting.
That's right.
Adults. And this is a big trend at music festivals.
It's
now,
massive,
yes?
Yeah. So we do face and body painting, glitter and temporary tattoos, which will be large ones, so they will be like sleeves or chest pieces and stuff like that.
So this is for the accountant who wants to go away for the weekend and pretend that he's living a different
life.
Right?
You know,
and how long does a temporary tattoo last?
They last for up to a week, but you can scrub them off, you know. So, but you know, I like to call them non-commitment tattoos.
This is a variation on we used to get Bazooka Joe tattoos years ago.
Yeah, the lick and stick kind of thing. Exactly.
Okay. And are they extensive kind of tattoos?
They'd be large, big piece. They're amazing. So we've brought them in, and we're the only ones in Ireland that have them at the moment. We're waiting. Pennies will probably have them next year, but anyway. people are really just like, these are unbelievable, and they're so excited about it. We did a festival last weekend. We did Forbidden Fruit, and we were so surprised because normally our clientele are women coming in, getting all their face and body face painted, glitter and everything. But we found we had about 80% of the clients were men, and they were all coming in to get all their tats and glitter. So
is it all about, it's about glitter and that kind of thing these days?
The face painting wasn't as big in Forbidden Fruit, but then again in Body and Soul next week it might be, you know. Mm-hmm. So it really depends. It's the clientele per festival is completely different, so just
and
depends.
Is it largely kids or
no, not at all
adults?
Not at all. So you know, like, part of being at a festival is experiencing all the festival experiences, and festivals aren't just about the music anymore, and that's what's so great about it. You get to go and try all these different things, and you know, it's not just going getting your punnet of chips like you know for you Natasha. People go and try these amazing foods, and for us then we're giving people the experience of going and getting extreme makeup or extreme, you know, glitter and stuff like that, and it's all just part of it. It's an experience,
and
you know?
We were joking about it, but it is about forgetting your real life for
it's
a while.
Totally,
life you could have had if it wasn't for those kids and the job and the mortgage and everything else.
We get a lot of teachers in who actually are like, will you cover me with glitter so that none of my students see me? That's happened a few times, which is hilarious.
So Natasha, obviously vegan food is all the go now. But you've been going to festivals for years in the UK, and you kind of grew up with it.
I left everything in a apart flat in Leicester when I was 18 and hitched to a free festival in England and never looked back. Left everything and started. I had a truck and then I had a bus, which I converted into a cafe. And then at that time, the whole thing was free festivals. No one paid in. It was all about having an experience and going. And I wasn't necessarily into the loud tunes or everything, but I was always a foodie. I just love feeding people. And that came as a natural part of, you know, enjoying the rebellious act of all gathering together in a field.
Yeah. You spent some time in Berlin as well, part of a kind of a cultural movement that was going on there.
Yeah, well, the Berlin Wall had just fallen in 1990. And if people go online and have a look at Tankhenge, they'll see the three panzer tanks as like a Stonehenge in opposite the Reichstag. And there's a table underneath it. And I used to do the food. So it was by Eastside Gallery, and people didn't have in the East. They hadn't got supermarkets. So the supermarkets, I mean, they built them, and the wall came down. They built all these supermarkets. They were just throwing all the food away. So we just went and got up the food and made it into, you know, sandwiches, and used to go in the clubs and sell it. And it was this rebellious. It was kind of this kind of rebellious act, really. That's how it started.
Yeah. You're a breadhead now, obviously.
It was about the dream
at the time.
It was, and
tell me, when did you come to Ireland?
1994.
And how was the vegan food scene in Ireland then?
I remember I came because there was an old hippie festival down in Rosinallis in Laois. It was hilarious. And I was teaching raw food vegan workshops. And even the hippies were like, she's mental. What is she talking about? It was hilarious. It was, yeah. I lived in a horse-drawn wagon for a few years around Ireland. That's what I was doing.
Okay, so you're the real deal, actually. Yeah. And then obviously, I presume you've grown with the festival scene here grew.
Yeah. And I started a company called Natasha's Living Food, which was a raw vegan company. And I was always very much focused on manufacturing and export. That was what I did. So I did that, got an investor, built a factory. But as that was going along, I also wanted to create an experience, because for me, food isn't necessarily going to a restaurant. We're not just going for the food, we're going for the ambiance, we're going for, yeah, and also the choice of food that we make is part of, like a lifestyle choice, you know? So for me, Natasha's Living Food was always about creating this life experience. You walk in, the food is an embodiment of the actual atmosphere. So it was always vital food, it was always really tasty. So I started then, Avril, who runs Body and Soul, Electric Picnic, and gave me the opportunity to put up a small tent, like a 20 foot by 20 foot tent in Body and Soul. It was about 10 years ago, and it just got phenomenally. I just grew and grew and grew and grew. So now I have about a 90 foot square venue. We always had music, poetry, art, and the food was also part of that whole ethos and culture of food.
Super. Yeah.
It's good fun.
Michael. Yes. Yoga at festivals. I'd say some people are wondering how did that work. What festivals have you done your yoga at?
A few, Body and Soul mainly, actually, over the years. Electric Picnic, Body and Soul at the Electric Picnic. A friend of mine runs one called Another Love Story, which is a smaller festival that happens at the end of August. So yeah, so those.
And how does it work? Is it with classes? Or?
Yeah, so usually there's an area dedicated to what they'd call the healing fields or the holistic. So there'd be an area dedicated to yoga and those type of disciplines, meditation or qigong or sound healing, I was thinking about it. It's the two opposites. In one sense, it's difficult in that there's so much going on, you know, and what you're talking about is helping people kind of tune in. And the other side of it is what you were talking about too, and with the idea that our lives are so stressful, you know, and there's so much going on for people and they're so busy. And you do kind of feed, when you go to a festival, the part of you that is more to do with freedom. So in some ways as well, I think those kind of holistic side to the festivals really nurtures that part of people.
And is it a difficult fit, though, at the same time? Because, okay, I'm thinking of, I haven't been to festivals in a while, but when I was a festival goer, yoga was probably the last thing on my mind in one way. Are people in the right?
There's been loads of experiences where I've been teaching a yoga class and somebody stumbles in and falls over somebody else, and, you know, and that kind of thing goes on. But I suppose there's such a wide variety of reasons people go to festivals. Some people go just to get pissed and for that, and other people go because they want to get their face painted, they want to eat vegan food, they want to live in a tent, they want to feel free for a few days. And I think quite often yoga and that type of thing can be part of that.
And is the idea that somebody might actually get converted if they're in that open-minded space and everything, they've never thought of yoga before, and that they've stumbled this?
You know, I suppose my experience over the years would be that quite often somebody would come up after a class and they would have had a moment in which something might have happened, you know, where they just, like, you know, they would have felt a sense of calmness they hadn't felt before. They would have, you know, had some sort of very special moment. And that's what the practice is kind of supporting in people. It's dropping into that deeper, stiller space. And that's available no matter whether you're in a traditional yoga class or in a yoga festival or you're in an office.
So there are then yoga festivals which are presumably a bit more
actually, you know, this year is the first time we're having an international yoga festival, Woodlands Yoga Festival in July, which is the first kind of one dedicated to yoga. Natasha's actually doing all the food.
Of course.
Yeah. There's no other option. So that's quite an exciting. So that's specifically, you know, there won't be really people getting drunk.
Yeah.
Will you be glad about that, Michael?
It makes life a little easier.
I'd say it does.
Yeah. The bouncers don't have to be there.
Do the yoga classes tend to happen earlier in the day?
They do, usually. Yeah.
And weather-wise, are you indoors or outdoors?
Well, you have the option, obviously. So all of the bigger festivals certainly would have the facilities to do it kind of under tents or under awnings or under that kind of thing. But then if you get the weather doing it outside, there's nothing like doing a class outside.
Orla, the readers want to know, is your glitter biodegradable? Or the listeners want to know, is your glitter biodegradable?
It is. Yes. We actually have, it was pretty hard to source, but we've sourced it and we only use biodegradable glitters. And we only have gotten into Body and Soul because we have biodegradable. Yeah, you wouldn't be able to use. And it's all about compostable now rather than... just by, because the compostable one will actually fully break down, but some of the biodegradables don't fully.
So. It's actually in packaging, you know, festivals, you get a whole thing about packaging, and there's a whole, you know, everyone's talking about plastics and stuff, but actually there's different gradients of plastic. Yeah. So in your biodegradable, you need an industrial composter actually for anything to happen. It still lasts however many hundreds of years, even though it says biodegradable on it. You need a certain industrial composter where it's properly compostable stuff has actually proven to compost in an average person's compost. There's a big difference actually.
I'll bet. Yeah. I'm thinking. Back to again like Failure or whatever, and I'm thinking of the packaging back then. But also the food, the traditional food, Natasha, at an Irish festival is a cremated burger, and then you can get your own easy single on the table on the side and put it on top of it. It's all obviously changed hugely. You must have seen that a big changes over the years.
I mean, when I got my first fruit jar, because I had the Natasha's tent, and then Sabah, who are good, you probably know Sabah, they're good friends of mine, and they had their food truck, and I was in my tent doing all my hippie food, and I was like, and they were mobbed, and I was like, I'm getting a food truck. And then so I created fast food vegan, you know, fast vegan food, so it would be similar to what, you know, the people are used to, except cruelty free and have an ethics behind it. So we do the burgers, but I make all the sauces, I make all the mayos, I make all of that stuff. And it's actually changed the whole dynamic about what people expect from a festival, what they expect from food and taste profiles.
And you wouldn't know it wasn't me.
You wouldn't know.
You eat one of her burgers, it's super tasty, and the chips are...
Yeah, golden chips.
And have you seen Irish people come around more to vegan food?
Oh my God,
over that time?
I mean, phenomenally so. Honestly, like I do a market in Bushy Park on a Saturday, and people who aren't vegan say, "Oh, I'm actually going to try that," just because of the grassroots movement has grown so phenomenally. I made a vegan 30 years. Mm-hmm. So like the phenomena of that is so powerful, and people are making a positive choice to have a cruelty-free life. And at a festival, they're really open to try new things. Mm. So they come and they experience something that's completely, for them, completely different. You know, but I mean, the journey towards that place right now has been filled with very funny experiences. You know, people like coming along going, "Can I have a chicken burger?" And I'm like, "Well, actually, you know, this is what we're going to have, and this is what we offer." And they're going, "What's that? Is that a chickpea? What's a chickpea?"
And tell me about the logistics of all this. I presume there's a lot involved in getting the truck into a festival. Like you need power, water, staff, all that kind of thing.
And you find different festivals have different, you know, some festivals, it's an all-one price. I mean, you'd be shocked. I'm not going to reveal. I can't do the big reveal.
I can't
do the big reveal. I can't.
You'd
be slaughtered. I won't be allowed into festivals if I give away the secret. But you'd be charged for a plug.
Yeah.
Okay.
You'd be charged, you know, €350 just for a plug. For each plug,
How many plugs do you need?
Depends, your fridge van. I have four food trucks. So we're like, you know, you charge five grand for a pitch plus. And what you're finding is that a lot of actual organisers are relying on traders to actually subsidise the festival. Mm. And that sometimes you'll find there's a kind of a lack of commitment in really making sure that there is a load that is shared between, that you don't have so many traders, that actually everyone can make money.
Yeah.
Because you're not there, I mean, you're there to give food, but you're not there as a charity. You're there to make a living. Because it is, ours is a family business, you know.
And so you've paid £5,000.
Could plus be £5,000. Plus a plug.
A few plugs, a few more thousand for plugs.
Plus staff.
Yeah.
Oh, you
so
really,
you,
yeah.
What, you need to make back basically £10,000 over the course of the weekend before you...
You need to do 15.
You need to do 15.
You have to do, 10,
before you're
grand.
Into profit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Staff and ingredients and stuff like that, yeah. It's a challenge, you know? And then that's really only the bigger festivals, you know?
Yeah, and I guess the thing is, you are part of the festival, in a way, part of the experience for people. Yeah. Orle, is it the same situation for you with the body painting?
The pitch fees are huge. Staff fees are huge as well. And then the product, you know? So it's just like... I mean, it is risk, you know. I mean, for example, last week on Monday, Bank Holiday Monday, we were at Forbidden Fruit and the place was dead. It was empty because it was lashing rain and it was grim and it was a Monday and everyone's going back to work. So who wants to get the face painted and all the stuff, you know? Yeah. A neck tattoo? No, thanks.
Yeah, yeah, well, presumably we should say that Forbidden Fruit probably very successful over the rest of the weekend.
Oh, yeah,
and everything.
It was fab. It was just, so it just depends. Yeah. Like, if you get a bad weekend, people aren't going to be running to get face painted and stuff. Yeah. So it is, it's a risk. And it's exhausting. You're exhausted before you get there because the work involved in getting everything to a place and then setting it up.
So you're having no fun at the festival?
I won't say that. No, you know, people who generally work at festivals would have liked to have gone to festivals. Like, I can't see you going in as a, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the way I see it. So I've always loved festival living and festival fun and just having a laugh with people and having, you know, we've had so much crack over the years with just having a laugh with people. Yeah. And there is some hard times too. And, you know, people can be really rude, whatever, you know, situations can happen. But
Do you get messy situations?
Oh, yeah, you do. But like, I mean, I'm mouthy enough that I'll tell people to get out of there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I wouldn't mess with
it. I wouldn't mess with it.
This is my tent, you're not allowed in, you know?
Yeah.
I've no problem saying anything, so.
And how much are you charging people for face painting?
Depending on the festival. So, you know, generally a face paint would be about €10. If it's kids, if it's a different family festival, it would only be €5. And then it kind of goes from there. So, you know, depending on how elaborative they want to go into body painting and stuff like that, then we kind of go from €15 up, you know.
And what kind of body painting are people after?
So we do chest pieces, like arm pieces, leg pieces, you know, just really nice, beautiful designs on people. Yeah.
Yeah,
like we've done installations as well where we'd actually, like, say, you know, a friend of mine did a camouflage paint during Electric Picnic. So they camouflaged a woman who was naked in one of the wooded areas and camouflaged her into a background, and it was just like an art installation piece. The problem is Ireland and it's cold, you know.
Basically,
the main issue, you know.
You need good take insulation. Body paint.
It does help. I'm not joking. If you get painted, you do feel slightly warmer. But definitely the Irish elements don't help for us.
And presumably you're not making. You have your premises as well, but you have to do a lot of other stuff besides festivals. You have to do corporate work and that kind of thing as well.
I run a studio in town and we teach body painting and face painting. We also have a shop, an online shop, which sell all body painting and face painting. And we work full, you know, with corporate companies. We do team building. We do loads of different things. Like,
is there an element these days of a lot of companies and, you know, these modern trendy companies trying to bring a kind of a festival experience?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I've been hired a few times by some of the social media.
Yeah, I have all the tech groups.
And what do you do with them?
I have a red Airstream truck and a trailer, and we would design a menu, a vegan menu as an offering, and they'd create a party, or, you know, event company that would create some kind of party or atmosphere, like they had one in Cork Street last year, you know, in the greenery, the guy who has the plant place on Cork Street. I don't know if you know. Anyway, and they created a whole jungle in there.
Mm.
And so we were in there and I created a Jurassic menu for the company, and things like that, you know, and they'd be great fun, you know, and they're the kind of gigs that also pay really well, and the people are really open and they're very friendly, and all the stress is that's not a huge amount of stress, so they're good fun.
Are they bringing you in to do yoga, the big companies, Michael?
Yeah. It's more and more these days, you know. Companies are always reaching out.
And is this because companies are obviously seeing the benefit of stuff like mindfulness, yoga, all that to make like, more productive little workers.
Well, really. You know, that's a huge part of it is that the stats are in these days, you know, in terms of productivity and looking after workers, that if you're looking after their mental health and their physical health, then it's a win-win.
What are people in general looking for out of yoga? Is it a mental, emotional thing or is it a physical thing?
I suppose with me specifically, it's the mental, emotional thing. That's really where I focus on. And I do it through the body, so it's a physical practice, but I work more with the meditation side of it. I think there's a huge pull, particularly with the younger people, that is would be more of the physical, you know. But obviously, if you're working the physical and you do a good workout, you feel better generally. Mm-hmm. But what I do would be slower, and I'd have an older demographic. That'd have a lot to do with mindfulness.
And there's a, would we call it a spiritual element to it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Explain to me about the sadhus, which is, that's kind of the model you use to explain the yoga journey, yes?
Yeah, well, I suppose, you know, in India you have these kind of holy men that are called sadhus, and they're kind of would be traditionally the people who would be, you know, the poorer people who would walk around, and they'd walk around with their bowls, and traditionally in India everybody would revere them and kind of give them space and feed them, and they wouldn't deal with kind of a lot of the modern stuff that we have to deal with in the world. But one of the things that, you know, you learn about as you learn about yoga with the sadhus is that they develop deeper awarenesses of what it is to be a human being. And a lot of the practice of yoga is trying to allow us to tap into our deeper resources so we can be in a world that is difficult, or we can, you know, meet our challenges or meet our work or meet our responsibilities and make it easier and easier on ourselves. That I think, you know, so often in the West, it's all about getting to point B and you get paid. And a lot of the yoga practice is about finding point A, you know, tapping into that inner space and being able to bring that with you as you go forward. And look, you know, there's all kinds of stuff going on, you know, in terms of, you know, like mental health issues and the statistics around that, mm-hmm. youth and suicide. And so this is just, for me, I found it's an amazing tool to really support people accessing their, you know, their best selves.
And of course, your greatest endorsement has been that you work with our president at a class of a sadhu in his own way.
Our
wise man. Are you still working with him?
I am indeed. Yeah, and look, Michael D is an amazing man. He's an amazing man. For me, you know, and even I've been working for nearly 10 years, and he really, I feel, embodies so much of what is great about not just about human beings, but about what Irish human beings. Like, he's got that incredible poetic mind, and he's got a big heart, and he's just an authentic man, you know, an authentic person.
And does he get a spiritual experience out of yoga?
Like he is a spiritual man. Like, and I think, you know, I think it's like spirituality is like a muscle. You know, you're either working it or you're not working it. And quite often people will have experiences and they might decide to go deeper with that, or they might not. Mm-hmm. But Michael D definitely has a very spiritual dimension to him.
Okay. Natasha, I want to ask you about, you know, you feed the punters, obviously.
Yes.
Do you get to feed the celebs at all?
Oh, I do, yeah.
Yeah, tell us some celebrities you fed.
Tim Robbins, when he came to, he had a band, and he came and he was a raw vegan. So he came down to Temple Bar. I used to have a store in Temple Bar Market, except I wasn't in Temple Bar, I was in Cork. I went, yeah, no problem, I'll come and feed you. Yeah, no worries. Got in the car and drove. I was in the Berra Peninsula on a meditation retreat. Yeah, no problem.
Right.
So yeah, I'll be there 3 hours. So I fed him and his crew, Jason Mraz. I would have fed all his crew when he was doing a tour. This year's in Oxygen, and Florence and the Machine were next door rehearsing. So I would have fed him and his crew for the whole weekend. And then we, yeah. And then who else was there? Those Duran Duran.
Vegans?
Yeah, I don't think, I think that they just make that choice.
Mm-hmm.
Massive Attack last year. So we get the artist liaison, then they come around to the festivals and they show them, the bands, the menus. They take pictures of the menus. So they seem to choose mine a lot. And
okay, so they're offered whatever food they want from everyone who's there.
And then they always choose mine. So the Massive Attack had said that there was the best after show food they'd ever had, which was nice. I would have catered for Cyndi Lauper when she came. You know, so I would have provided food for them. So quite a few. I've been asked to do like private chefing for film sets and things like that. And I fed Crispin Glover, you know, Chris from Back to the Future.
Mm-hmm.
I was his chef for 3 weeks.
Orla, have you body painted any of the celebs? Tell me.
I have not for festivals, but for kind of events. So I'm terrible. I don't know Gaa players. So they were three Gaa players and it was for a Littlewoods ad. I can't remember what their names were. And I know one of them was in the Kilkenny team. He was cute.
And was it all it was glitter and
no, it was all painted sequins. They fully got painted up in their Gaa colours and so it was all kind of warrior style and stuff, you know,
manly stuff,
very manly.
Slip in a few sequins now. Okay guys, that's all very interesting. Give everyone a taste for getting out there and going to some festivals over the summer. Orla Gilson and Michael Ryan and Natasha Chapur, thank you all for coming in and we'll take a break.
Podcast The Marion Finucane Show at rte.ie/radio.